It's about 2:30 a.m. I am in Beitbridge border between South Africa and Zimbabwe. I haven't really been feeling well, but this trip has had a particular calling on me. I'm traveling with a healers community that goes by the name of Heal the Healer, but I'll tell you more about it later. I'm about to get my passport stamped on the South African side of the border, and we're about to cross over. The tension at the border is so palpable. There is a quiet sense of sadness and a pervasive desperation in this place. But that's kind of understandable, because it's also a strange time to be traveling from South Africa into Zimbabwe, because a couple of days ago, this happened.
Durban's street. Expanding their campaign, March and March brought their nationwide action against undocumented migrants.
Singing and chanting the same songs, they say Abahambe to all illegal foreigners.
They're calling for an end to illegal immigration.
June 30 is no longer just a protest date. It has become a pressure point in South Africa's already tense debate about illegal immigration, border control, unemployment, crime, and the state's ability to enforce its own laws.
They will kill us. They will kill us, seriously.
Part of the reason why I ended up doing this trip is because I wanted to understand what the spiritual impact of the illegal immigration issue is having on us. I wanted to know if there was a spiritual dynamic to the issue, and what is it that we are not paying attention to. What led me to deciding to make a physical trip is part coincidence and part a result of a few conversations that I have been having with Sibiji. He is a healer who I have hosted before on the podcast. And he had been sharing with me his views on why spiritually March and March movement is not only necessary, but it is crucial, important. I do have to say, though, that this conversation is a challenging one to listen to. This issue is probably one of the most polarizing and divisive issues that we've faced in a very long time. But I think it is also crucial that we do take time to listen to the different sides of the spectrum, because I feel that in it we could find a way of understanding not just ourselves but our own spirituality better. I just want us to lay the foundation for people.
Got you.
So then firstly, for you, what do you believe led to
March in March. What were you seeing before, as you were hearing, as it was like a rumor, as it was a potential thing? My thing with March in March has always been that healers have been weirdly quiet. I've very, very rarely heard or seen or read healers talking about March and March. And that's also a thing that piqued my interest. I've always wanted to understand it from that perspective. So you are the one who spoke to me about it first. So when you were seeing it, you know, what were you feeling? What were you picking up as you were coming close to this? Or before even the date was realized?
I think it goes back to the desecration of the land and desecration of spiritual spaces, right? And by that, we are going today, and then 2-3 years later, it's like filthy. You go up a mountain today, 2-3 years later, it's filthy. That was, for me, a symptom of something terribly wrong with the spiritual setup of the people who are occupying space in general.
And by that, by people, you don't mean foreign national. No, you mean
at this point, its manifestation felt like that.
Okay.
Because remember, your initial, or rather, my initial interaction with that particular thing of seeing the chila everywhere we go, ke renale flop ke horrona as dingaka. And at that point, I'm talking about South African healers. Hore, how do we allow ourselves to allow spaces that we call sacred? In fact, never mind the fact that we call them sacred. We are sent to these spaces for people to come and heal. And for some odd reason, as the custodians of such spaces, hudichila, what has become of us, right? And then it starts kadichila chigi chigi, these killings. I mean, I got, what's the word I'm looking for? I got my phones taken, you know, gile kunukeng. It's a known thing. It's sacrilegious hore motho ha le busy kunukeng. You even interact with them. Le dumelang o sanbonane. It's how we grew up, at least, right? And then you would naturally then give people space. But in that moment of a sacred act, whether I'm in a very vulnerable state because I get, I'm submitting to Moya and the instructions thereof. So Girumilweda, as it were, as a people, still again as a collective, arrive at Mutupizi Ratseba Hurumutupizi. And at that point, I'm not a healer, I'm not a prophet, I'm not Mutwa Kerek, I'm just a human being with Lohamids. And you can't even recognize that. So that's how it starts for me. Because if we can't even respect something that we've all known, Khore protects us and gives us nourishment in many ways, like, and a requires in Chihore, this land gives, like, we don't even celebrate it anymore because it is our birthright, right? It's just deeply entrenched in our system of being human. Kutompa naha, the land, right? So if you then step out of kind of like the spiritual scope and be like, what's the social scope of where we are as a collective within South Africa? And then you start observing the tensions. Or Norman, what's working? Everybody's a junkie, kukasiaka. And a junkie, yamagaza, because you know it different. Ngare, it's taking from the top. And by the top, we're talking my model C.
Okay.
We're talking professionals. We're talking you know, Mfanakasi, child of a businessman, child of a pastor, all the descendants Sadingaka, they're all of kings, priests, pastors. There's just descendants. Everybody's descendant is on some type of warpath to destroy themselves and their lineage because of drugs, complacency, and. So I'm like, okay, then we have to then start looking at the sources. And it then becomes common knowledge for this nationality. This speciality, since my feet, and then you can start tracking. Since the Paza shop, and then you start paying attention for certain nationalities. And then what used to then be, again, the prejudice against certain nationalities. These ones are drug dealers. These ones are this. These ones are that. Then the fear developed. And then that fear, given the context and the background of the lived realities of a collective of people who live and breathe Ubuntu, they themselves start saying, we've lost it. Mm-hmm. And how did we lose it? Who did we lose it to?
Doesn't that make scapegoating easier to say, we have this issue that initially you were saying that it stems from us losing that sacred connection with the land.
Mm.
And now that is having consequences.
Mm.
And now to go from, we are living through the consequences of being disconnected from the sacredness of the land to saying, this nationality is the cause.
Mm.
Isn't that scapegoating?
No, not in the least.
Mm-hmm.
How is it scapegoating when those said nationalities are doing the things that we say they are doing?
Mm-hmm.
How, because that's the moral fiber, the moral fabric of our societies that is being eroded. I've got every right to mess up in my own space. You've got no right to encourage me continuously and be brazen about it. And I get all bonza, in fact, get all bonza continuously over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll get to a point where like I think it's in X. It is not in any way, shape or form scapegoating.
Mm-hmm.
And another reality, it's one thing, Rishabe, South Africans have always been good at diagnosing its own problems and being aware and keeping them here.
Mm-hmm.
Being the government. There isn't a single politician that is safe from South African commentary,
mm-hmm.
South African criticism,
mm-hmm.
because it's who we are as a nation. We've always known that. Ahuna Zara that comes to education, we've always known that. So we've known that we've had these issues and that we've been fighting in however we've been fighting in trying to resolve them. Ramacha every year. But every single year, there's this continued kind of upward trend, behavior that is not common to us. And we have to diagnose, as I was saying, these social ills, right? And look at them. We had a pandemic, HIV, for instance, post-90, before we were even relaxed, as we got into democracy. There was this pandemic, HIV. I can't begin to tell you, but outside of it being a scourge, we'd ever had a scourge, any drugs like that. We'd always known, but it was never a scourge in the same way that it is now. In fact, in our kind of like generation, you and I, weed was like hectic, if no weed's Uber. Today, it truly is a gateway drug. It's become that. But again, I say, there is a lived collective reality, Yama South African. The people who live and breathe Ubuntu, who are unable to practice that Ubuntu because somebody is rudely interrupting our process.
Do you, by your assertion, are you saying that had there been not no foreign nationals who brought the drugs here, that the land, our relationship with the land would be better.
Yes. It was. No, who's the chiller so? I get service delivery issues. It's not new to us. But being acknowledged to this extent, because you're having to share space with people who just throw things. And about why it's because by the time Bafitla Moka say how mfana, where they come from, that's a mess compared to where you. So you're having to negotiate space. Liba Tubasa understanding what Butu is. Because they haven't had it in such a long time, and to a point where we as South Africans can never even speculate on whether or not it's part of their collective way of living. Because we have now become wise to the fact that Batubaba Kura within their own spaces are along tribal lines. Yapala yimo South Africa, something like that.
So in what you're saying is that there's a way in which people who come, other Africans who come into the country, are inhabiting the space that is causing spiritual
misalignment. Yes.
How are they doing
that? We go back to those sacred spaces, right? We then look at the popping up of this topic of Horwala and where the most powerful healers are supposedly found. It's always somebody from Ghana, from Nigeria, from Mozambique, from Zimbabwe, from to a point where Okara Ronadinga Gazamo South Africa. Like we're just there, social media, this, that, this, that. RTB next. Right. That belief then becomes perpetuated to the point where spirituality, how buakayona, it's always from a prosperity-driven type of thing. Ama poise, azoguletheli imali, or gezanga this thing, uzoba nenhlanhla, lo mama wa here, whatever, whatever. So we, the custodians of the land, start bringing these foreign practices back home. And these people, some of them aren't even outside of the country. Where we are learning out of desperation, a lack of whatever it may be, right? But I remember we're referring to the land, something that we found here. So even if we do lose our way along the way, as South Africans, right, the land will always reject our ways. And how it rejects our ways is... it's like, understand? And then how you are for something like Serwalo Saha will also be yada. Maybe in the yard or whatever it is. But because the person who's teaching you this thing, who's handing it over, the rules and regulations, as it's of that particular geographical space.
Different modalities function within certain
we cannot,
spaces.
Whether we want to even spread the idea of pan-Africanism. Pan-Africanism in and of itself should allow for the space where respect for the fact that within this pan-Africanism, a difference of doing things
spiritually,
socially, and otherwise. We cannot impose a culture in a space where the people matter. But when are you going to be so forceful? Because I don't understand why I say it's this thing.
So modalities are not universal.
Yes. So, spiritually, it would seem that when it comes to being healers, we're more focused on that, and that, or rather, we were supposed to have continued on that path of healing bloodlines. somebody brought prosperity here. Because some pastor also go kai was wagala I shape the crusade. Some pastor wako kai different countries, mind you. And a rababona gama tlogore maratswang ba fetu. How are we falling for this?
You know where I find difficulty in what you're saying.
Mm.
It's a number of ways, but mainly if I were to speak for myself, yeah, I can't say I've seen other Africans, other people from other African countries coming into the country and practicing. I see churches, you know?
Mm.
I see churches, those ones are not hidden. You know, there's churches, you go to any city, Joburg, wherever.
Yeah, you got know, you.
Where there was a shop, now
got you.
It's a church now. Where got there was you. An office space, now
got
it's
you.
A church now, you know.
Got you.
So I'm trying to make the connection between what you're saying, Hore, people from different countries coming here is affecting how our modalities function, when I can say that I don't know how that happens, in that I don't... When you go to the rivers, I don't see Malawians at the rivers. I don't see Zimbabweans at the rivers. I don't see, you know, Ghanaians at the mountains. I don't see, you know what I mean? Mm. It's us in those spaces.
Yeah.
It's us who are, you know, not handling those spaces with care.
Mm.
So I'm trying to make that connection to say, how is it that people from... there's a part that I understand. Here's a part that I understand, which is actually very interesting. The idea that different... modalities exist based on geography, because that in many ways is common sense culturally speaking, and by that I mean our beliefs. When you track the history of our cultures and whatever, everything that we did was connected to where we were, you know, by tapping.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Whoever,
for sure.
You know,
Dikwena,
you know what I mean?
It was
always our cultures, the different iterations of our cultures is deeply rooted in the geographic space in which it was born into, or it spent more time in, you know, and that would then give it that character, you know, or that shape or that modality or even that frequency,
okay,
if I were to put it that way.
Got
you know,
you.
That one, it's actually, I find it very, very fascinating.
Yeah.
But now I'm trying to understand how then other Africans are affecting it negatively. Are you saying that it's not necessarily that they're practicing, but it's their spiritual presence?
It's their spiritual presence, because I was going to get to that.
Okay.
I get we're talking about the symptom.
Yes.
That I saw.
Yes.
Okay. And then I went through a process of trying to catch up at different levels.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, spiritually, then I told you, then you look at it from a social thing. And then you're going to look at it from a spiritual level again. Katabaya, what practices exist?
Mm-hmm.
And so, in the same way, you don't see Ghanaians, you don't see Zimbabweans and because you haven't been in some of the spaces where they are there.
Mm-hmm.
One understand.
Mm-hmm.
So there's also that kind of reality. Your lived experience, as valid as it is, is pretty limited in terms of understanding that part of this conversation, perhaps, that confuses you, or that you know, that you're challenging, and rightfully so. And the only response I could really ever give you is that how we let go, what do you call this thing, we low pasha go bareng ho, you know, like esigangeni la kuvuleke khona, and then ukreya dikota tse paya dinepetsa batho, you know, red crosses,
those binding spell situations,
right?
Mm-hmm.
The week before, no khona le kereke ya batho ba pereng to tse white.
Mhm.
Wa understand in that particular space.
Mm.
So khona bona gore, but you shouldn't claim this space like this.
Okay.
Why? Because we've always known gore it's a shared space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like you can have a space of ditulu say 5. You won't repeat. So the spiritual practices in and of themselves, we shouldn't also look at them, as I said, well, I haven't said it, but from a African belief system versus Christianity / Islam / this, because it's not necessarily an us against them thing. Mm. It's the modalities that exist to arrive at our kind of spiritual, not peak, but to kind of elevate, or rather even perhaps go back as South Africans, as a collective. Like, that feeling has disappeared.
Isn't it a perception?
How could it be? If conversation is reminding us of that fact. Like this. Drug usage like this. There are certain conversations that in your awareness of where you may be in the food chain, you've never had to struggle with this. So there's a newness to it. And when we tie it to politics, yahore, it's what, 32 years versus 60, 70 odd years in some instances. Mm. The expression of free black people should exist further north from us as South Africans.
Mm-hmm.
The movement should be towards that because somebody up there would have mastered the blackness of or what free blackness looks like.
It epitomizes.
And ideally for all of us, spiritual existence, financial well-being, social well-being, economic freedom, all of these things. It doesn't exist.
Mm.
It doesn't exist. And I'll use a very brutal example, and it may come across as being disrespectful. It's going to be very difficult to share anything with people who believe or practice open defecation. Open defecation for Nagistrate on Vito. Yes. Even at our poorest. Our poorest of the poor have never ever resorted to that lack of dignity. So a person who may not necessarily practice it, but comes from a space where that is a norm. No matter where they sit on the economic scale, you're going to have a difficulty sharing space with them.
Mm.
Because there's something that doesn't exist, that level of dignity.
And that reflects on a person's spiritual well-being? Or that lack thereof, or a different
understanding,
a conflicting understanding of spiritual hygiene.
At that level, when we allow that, even as a collective, we've never done that as people but this space. So the symptoms of this space is that when all of these people who come from the various areas, open defecation being one, but you know, an example of many others.
So let me get this right. Open defecation being spaces that have come to seem very unhygienic, where people are congregating. Is that what you mean?
No, open defecation, kiavaya, and then I need to release. I just go into that river.
Okay.
Kiloshaya, whatever, and then kitlapi matsoko. It's going to be very hard.
And you're saying this is what they do in there, where they come from.
Yes, it's documented.
You know, what a lot of what you're saying is not really sitting right with me.
Mm.
And my comeback for me is, it's like, firstly, we're making a lot of assumptions, but at the same time, I don't know what those assumptions are because I haven't been to a lot of African countries.
Who's the, when you say the assumptions, what would then be the assumptions that one is making?
About how people live in their own countries. Oh. Like, I mean, you can watch documentaries. If you were to watch, like, for example, a BBC documentary about South Africa, you would be certain that South Africa is just a rubbish place to live in.
Okay.
You know? Because it always portrays it in a particular light. Mm. I think I would need to spend more time sort of digging deeper into how people actually do live in that. And because I never want to make assumptions without having some kind of solid. But I wanna come back to this thing of the modalities and the frequencies of different locations. When March and March comes, they say Mabahambe, right? Meaning that it implies a certain level of ownership.
Of what?
Of land. Okay. To say, we, and I get it now, we're looking at this from a spiritual perspective. And you are saying that there is spiritual justification for it, right? Mm. So when we say Mabahambe, we are presupposing that the land is ours spiritually as well.
Yes. But why would that even be a question to ask?
Here's why it's a question to ask. Mm. South Africa, South Africanness, Zimbabweanness, everything is all a Western construct.
I think the biggest problem
my issue is that we are now defending colonial identities, because South Africa is a forced identity. It's not an identity that we chose.
I completely get and respect that perspective. Yeah, we are saying that the land is ours and there's colonial. Can I get you? What did you say? So I don't misquote you.
Colonial identity.
Yeah, a colonial identity.
Yes, right? South Africa is a colonial identity. Yes, no.
I'm not in any way, shape, or form disputing that.
Mm.
Going back to that conversation around spirituality, the spiritual response of the land is that those of you who do not do this, that, and the other, you are going to get rejected off of the land. South Africa from a colonial thing, because one of our other issues, especially, which I find quite fascinating, is when we look at ourselves, I don't know, with an element of anthropology.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's look at present day right now.
Okay.
Because the evidence needs to exist outside of those realms, apartheid and colonialism. I say this because I know those things exist. I know. There's nothing that I could ever present to you. But it is that very colonialism that trains us to even question things like the land is responding. When we wanted a better country. Yes. Kneeling in Twiwe Nahoshebilen Tatemukuluahao 100 years ago when he was fighting for an identity for some space. He wasn't fighting with a person from another country. He was here fighting a particular people with other people from this space of different races or
tribes
rather. It happened, I say, some thousand years, millennia ago. It happened. And Aribuaka Badimbarona, those are the people that we're referring to. Mm. And they too had practices. If somebody Otswango go Zimbabwe 100 years ago, Arumetsike Badimbaga in South Africa, the practice at Richunangi, get that very same ancestor whose bones are here. And that ancestor would have guided them. No, no desecration, complete respect of ancestral guidance. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I'll sing it about. Now, we have a collective of people who, for those economic reasons and find themselves here, and they will use whatever it is ever using here, right? Mm-hmm. However they know how to use it. Rona, as we are watching the land and whatever, is sinyega. Mm-hmm. South Africa ya sinyega bafetu. Dilo abadi luki sirarapela, rarapela, rarapela. Boom, we wake up. The response ki, kiye machen bach. But there were fears, yahor no, people are going to die.
Mm.
And you yourself spoke a little bit on the Zulu side of things and your fear, kama Zulu, and.
Mm.
I was like, it's not going to happen like that. And I didn't have a, beyond saying it to you, there was no evidence to prove me right or prove me wrong.
Mm.
But I was adamant that it wasn't going to happen. Because this, there's nothing violent about what's going on here. What, like, our country is violent. We know we've got violent crimes. But Rona, as a collective, Pela March and March doesn't happen in Jacinta's homestead, or the idea of these anti-illegal immigrations. They don't happen within a homestead. They don't happen within KZN or just Gauteng. They happen across the land, across the country.
So for you,
in
your view, the spiritual side of March and March is a purging of some sort.
Yes.
A spiritual purging.
Yes. We are going to call it xenophobic if we don't understand gore re ka sietse dilo tse sa tshwaneng lang gore re dietse within certain spaces e shapa le rona the natives of the land and ra tseba and when we've messed up we pay penance. But if there's nobody who sees the land as a safe haven, because what then is a different difference between somebody who comes here illegally and somebody who extracts gold and leaves us with nothing? Yes.
Hey, now when you talk about gold, now you're bringing white people in.
Well, I understand.
Because those are the people. Okay, I wanna keep it here.
Sure.
I wanna keep it to the idea of that March and March is the embodiment of spiritual purging, and that spiritual purging being birthed by, as you implied, the spirit of the land.
Yes.
And the spirit of the land saying what exactly?
That nobody respects this place anymore.
And yes. And now in saying that, those who are not, and this is where the difficulty is right? Because you are saying that the spirit of the land, and it's something we need to sort of dissect a bit more. You're saying that the spirit of the land is crying out, it's complaining, or it's putting its foot down to say.
Yes.
But it is doing that according to colonial borders.
It would have to, otherwise we'd kill each other.
How so?
The very fear that you had, it would have come into reality where people are shooting, because you are Zimbabwean, this, that, we will kill you now.
Here's my challenge, or rather, here's my way I'm struggling with this. Who is the land crying for? Is it crying for itself? How is the land choosing who should be here and who should not be here when any piece of land?
Where's your belly button?
Eh?
Where's your umbilical cord?
Scoot.
Eh?
let me finish.
Sure. Right?
Let me finish. Ne? In the purging that needs to happen, there's a thing in what you're saying that says that some people must go because the land is saying so. And my where my challenge is, where I'm finding difficulty is that, for example, KZN. Before KZN, before Zulu cultures lived there, there was Xhosa cultures who lived there first, and then they moved to the Eastern Cape. You know, any piece of land was traversed by different people at a different point. So if we are saying that these people must leave because we are here, what if the people who were here before us say, you must also leave? You know what I mean?
Again, we're moving with the past, right?
Okay.
And leave the what if component as opposed to looking at the now.
All right.
What is happening right now and how I'm hoping that Renali flop. And Lonaba Chudneng could flop everything via sharp. Much and much, I get illegal immigrants. What's happening at the top? Mkwanaz.
Okay.
Purging. So this is why I say, Hore, if we're going to limit it to just looking at it through that Christianity, bungaka, khurwala, fel, and we just kind of like confine it to that space.
Okay.
We won't look at it in its totality.
So you're saying that March and March, Madlanga Commission, and all the things that the drama, the dramatic things that are happening, is all part of the same purchase. Yes.
Because how kasheva? It's as if all of us suddenly was like a veil was removed in one sitting. Because ever since that statement was made, July 6th last year, Rebona Kamalo, Huryo, yo. Up until we get to the streets, because it had to happen in the form of marches and mass action, so that even Lepara gets paid attention to Horion Dwana. When I crunch up, we failed you, however we failed you, but today, Riada, because that's the cause of your problem. Accountability on our part. Yes. So Mabahambe is not one isolated incident. It is a collective, or rather a collection of years and years and years and years of a complete disregard to Hotompa Nabutu. How do Nabutu, again I say, is a deeply spiritual way of being. That's why we translate it. Between umuntu umuntu kabantu muthu ke muthu kabantu.
How do we then deal with the consequences of spiritual displacement?
This is how we're dealing with it. By fixing it. Because of the consequences.
You don't consider much and much a form of spiritual displacement of people, or do you feel it's a fixing of spiritual
It is a fixing of spiritual things, because it's a collective of people who are saying peacefully, vi.
What happens spiritually after March and March? What, or rather, what is the intention of what should happen? Ideally, what happens after? What is supposed to happen
now that we've seen what happens when we don't pay attention to the important things, where it's about money and greed. And the lot of us, the many clients, the many twasas, the bigger the offering, the bigger my Bentley, the more successful my congregation, or, you know, the bigger the Bentley, the bigger the congregation, the more sophisticated, the bigger the lights, the bigger the this. All of these things are happening while our country is going to the pits.
The purging is not done.
No, far from it.
And by that, by saying it's not done, I mean the illegal foreigners leaving is not the end of purging.
No. There's no war here.
Yes. As in it's still gonna be happening.
Yes.
But facing us as South Africans.
Yes.
So marching march is the first step.
Yes.
In spiritual correction.
Yes.
Spiritual course correction, yes, of the country.
Yes.
And then
not necessarily the first steps, one of the many steps.
Okay, yes. A necessary step. Maybe the biggest step.
Yes. The more visible
one. The more visible, yes, one.
But the more visible one is the most important one, because you must look at the spirit of March and March, not what it's branded or what we believe it to be. Why I say this, mm-hmm, is very important. At no point across the conversations someone did they say looting or siyababulala, this, that, mm, and the other. This is coming from a people who are known to be like that. Mm.
Since then, the purging, mm, the course correction, mm, is not ending with however illegal immigrants being deported or, mm, being processed or whatever. From what you're saying, the hardships are still coming for spiritually for South Africans in terms of getting them to correct their own ways once this part of this work is done. Now, it's going to come to healers who have to then also in some ways be purged of the practices that are sickening the land,
yeah,
or spiritual people across the board, yeah, be it religious, be it African spiritual.
But that happens at family level though. Because if when you're part of the nonsense that has been going on, yes. So if Luna from the year 2010, it's too late. Because limuto radisitse mo chaetse, even some of them are not even alive anymore, the ones by radisitse ngilotse. You can't even trace them. O chaetse gore no, the day of reckoning is going to arrive. Because vusi, what then would be the purpose of us saying gore le rona we are descendants of dingaka tsa go gorong, for instance, the king's court. If you are unable to tell the king, it's going to be a little bit messy, and then you retain your space within that court.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, the spiritual confusion or the spiritual challenge, or the way in which you're challenging,
mm-hmm,
this conversation, and, mm, as I said, rightfully so, is because you've never perhaps had to, as Mutwamoya,
mm,
experience something like this,
mm-hmm,
happening in your country of this magnitude.
Mm.
And that is a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
And your questions, your fears, anxieties, and are justified, right? But at the level of Moya, Lin Nagiliso, I never, even as assertive as I am speaking about this topic, I didn't arrive here with some bold confidence. I had to challenge the thoughts. And at the end of all of those challenges, you're like, Mara Moya or Kutlo Bakren, Nagitaring. If I can apply the same methodology to Mutoku Langerutro Fola, I must be able to be confident enough. Why? Because Badimbaru Nabacho Jualo. The middle is always messy. That we know for a fact. And because Kimucho Obuang, I don't have a full understanding or a full grasp of what Moya is. I may not necessarily have the words or a sequential kind of way of explaining things where it can be followed in a way that makes sense.
Mm.
And the presentation thereof is not sexy. It's not a dissertation.
Mm.
That's how Moya operates. It's like, no, tabaki. Naru chai like at the end, there's going to be the in-between.
Mm.
And the in-between is going to shake you. It's going to make you uncomfortable, this, that, and the other. But do I trust Moya enough to say Horiko Bashapu? Yeah.
We just finished with the Zim border crossing and our passports are stamped.
So the conversation with Zibichi was tough for me for a number of reasons, but I felt that it is important that such conversations are had. The immigration issue has been extremely polarizing, as I said, in many ways, yet very little about it has been discussed in relation to spirituality and our lives. I had several conversations with him in the months leading up to the date of June 30, which is the date that the organizers of the march said that was the deadline for illegal or undocumented migrants to leave the country. The conversations forced me to face my own ignorance with regards to the lived experiences, not just of South Africans who resonate with the view that illegal migrants are causing real social and economic issues in the country, but also the lived experiences of those very migrants who this whole thing also affects. The coincidence part is that in those same months leading up to the march, I was invited by Gogo Thato Tsugudu to come on this trip to Zimbabwe. When the invite came, it really was a confirmation that this topic does need to be explored more broadly. But initially, I didn't accept an invitation. I actually didn't want to. And the reason for this is because a couple of years ago, I was on this exact same trip, this pilgrimage, as it were. I suffered what I can only call a spiritual rejection from the land, a land that seemingly wanted nothing to do with me. I will tell you about it in the next episode. Right now, we're at the border building in Zim. It's just after 3. It is probably 5 degrees outside. It is freezing. I'm looking at a young Zimbabwean couple. They are probably younger than me. They are sitting on the pavement next to the building. They have what looks like all their belongings with them. The lady looks exhausted. She's tired. She is sleeping on her thighs, and the man is holding a baby, probably not even a year old. This may be all they have in the world, all this luggage. A handful of bags, too big to carry on their own, and a baby too small to hand over to anyone. All three sitting in the freezing cold, like thousands of others, in a makeshift camp not too far from here. All waiting for the sun to rise on an uncertain future.